Welcome back to Dakota Midday Tech Radio for Friday, June 28th. We're coming to you live today from SDN Communications in Sioux Falls. Our 800 number is 1-800-524-3604. That's 800-524-3604. You can also drop us an email. Send that to midday, M-I-D-D-A-Y, at sdpb.org. Today's panelists are SDN sales engineer Amos Asop. Hello, Amos.
Hello, and welcome back.
Good day to you, sir. It's a beautiful day in Sioux Falls here.
Absolutely.
And from Peer, Jeffrey Lederich, a technology integration specialist, joins us from BIT. Hi, Jeff.
Hello, all.
Is it a lovely day in Peer as well, I assume?
Yes, it is. Better than earlier this week, and hopefully it keeps that way for the weekend and through the 4th.
Oh, yeah. Let's just say it right now. I hope everybody has a fantastic and safe 4th right on through next week. I don't know if there's a lot of folks taking off today and doing their thing all next week, but I suspect there are. A reminder, listeners, if you'd like a list of the links that we're going to talk about on today's show, we'll post those to the web shortly, sometimes even as we're doing it. We do that to our Facebook page, facebook.com/techradio. I have already put a link there about some summer gadgets and things. Please take a look at that, and that's the way to one way to interact with us is through our Facebook page. And we've got a question on there about MacBook Pros. We're going to hold that till later in the show, and we'll have one of our MacBook people on with us, and they can better answer that. This is your chance to call for help on SDPB Radio, 1-800-524-3604. Amos, the reason I put that link on Facebook was precisely because of the holiday coming up next week. It's got me thinking. It's my my couple days of the year that I'm going to be in a tent. it's my obligated tent time next week, and it got me thinking about the tech that I carry around with me all the time. Am I going to take my, you've seen my behemoth laptop here.
Absolutely.
Am I going to take this with me? Absolutely not. I think it weighs as much as the tent does.
Yes.
But I do need to bring some tech along with me because I cannot become unconnected despite the wishes of my wife and others that are going to be with me. It's just not going to happen. So I'm going to have probably phone, probably, I don't know, I haven't figured it out yet if I'm going to take a netbook or an iPad or whatever with me, but it begs the question, how, am I going to be able to stay connected? Mm-hmm. Is there going to be a cell tower anywhere near this? And the event I'm going to be at, they usually put one up.
Sure.
They usually put one up for the event, so that's kind of nice. So there will be cell reception there. But then how do I keep this stuff charged? Do I find somebody with a camper and get a really long extension cord?
And I see some of your tech gadgets there actually lend themselves to work really well in that. I do have to say that not last weekend, but the previous weekend, I did sort of an experiment in my own right. I wasn't sure how I was going to go, but I went camping, and by camping I mean a cabin that had a full kitchen and bathroom. So it wasn't really camping; it wasn't spending time in a tent, and there was electricity and such. But there was no TV. It was in an area that had really, really poor cell reception. And I didn't take along a laptop or a tablet or anything else. In fact, when I got there, I checked and made sure that there were no fires on my phone, and then I shut it off. And I did that. My intention was I got there on a Sunday night and was going to leave on a Wednesday afternoon. And my intention was to leave it off for the entire time and just disconnect from it, get away from technology, enjoy the camping, enjoy the nature. There was lots of trails, brought the bikes and that sort of stuff. And I lasted until the next morning about noon before it just got to be too much, and I had to run over just to check it, just to see if there was anything
there.
And it was difficult, and as soon as I shut it off again, I thought this is what we've become, is dependent upon this electronic instant communication where everybody from work knew where I was. I wasn't going to be bothered. They weren't going to be upset if they, couldn't get a hold of me. But yet I still have this drive to be connected with the rest of the world, even though the whole goal there was to be disconnected. And so if you had these gadgets that we're talking about here from PCMag, things would be a lot easier. You know, whether you're out actually doing camping where you don't have an extension cord, and we're talking about that that bag that's got the solar cell on the side of it, solar beach tote that'll charge your cell phone just by sitting in the sun.
Which is a cool idea, by the way.
It is, absolutely.
Here's my deal, okay? So there's this premise that you can't be connected on and during summer vacation and have a good time. And I don't understand that. I mean, I think I can probably go one way or the other. I can shut off and disconnect, or I can, you know, I guess I'd prefer to check a text every now and then, make sure the kids are doing okay, just for peace of mind's sake. Mm-hmm. But there seems to be this, how do I want to put this delicately for radio? There seems to be a large segment of the population that thinks that if you need to, your desire to check your email or a Facebook or a whatever, that you're not really enjoying yourself out in the outdoor. You know, that you can't, you're ruining everybody's vacation because you check your phone every now
right.
and then.
And that was kind of my intention, was to get away from it, was to enjoy the vacation, was to enjoy the
but can't you have your tech and enjoy the vacation at the same time?
You know, the problem I found, there has to be a happy medium, I suppose. The problem I found was that my constant thinking about not consciously not being involved in tech, not having something on me, was more distracting than the 3 or 4 seconds it would have taken me to check my phone had my phone been on. And it was difficult. I suppose it's one of those things that had I gotten through the first day, the next 3 days would have been fine. But, you know, there's something to it.
And there's one other element to think about with especially common and modern tech is they can also be your lifeline. When I go out and stuff, I'll turn stuff off or go out of cell coverage, but I still carry my phone or something that can at least do GPS, be it whatever device it is, because everyone reads the news. People can get lost, even if you know the train, especially in like the hills areas and stuff like that. And sometimes you do need to call for help, or bad things happen. Legs get broken, going climbing or up or down cliffs. People get lost. You know, there's animal attacks occasionally, or a snake bite, or something like that. So it's also important to keep those devices and keep them charged and useful. Even if you plan to go place with no cell coverage, at least you have GPS to maybe get you out of the area in case you get lost. So you have to think about that kind of stuff too, and you have to think about protecting those devices, not so much having them on you, but they're kind of worthless if, and this is, you know, around the river and pier, if it falls into the water, it's kind of broken. So waterproof cases, ways to charge them, impact-resistant cases for especially GPS and phones, which are becoming, you know, your major lifelines. A lot of people go out by themselves nowadays instead of going in groups, and if you don't go in a group, then there's no one to get you help if something should happen. So
yeah, there's an interesting article I read in from Consumer Reports on some of these things that you're talking about, Dry Case, Trendy Digital, Seattle Sports, and you know, about the thing about dunking things in water and keeping it out of sand and things like that. And they found that you know, just a slider hefty bag, you
oh,
know
right.
does a pretty pretty good
it
job
does.
For the
Absolutely.
For the cost of it, and for the convenience of running down to Hy-Vee or whatever and just picking one up, versus, you know, sinking a lot of money into the really what you consider good stuff and the brightly colored
right.
things and all that other stuff, which is nice if you have it, but
it
you may be able to get by with some of that very low tech, a sandwich bag.
You know, and that's I saw a great example of that. 2 weeks ago, we had the color run here in town. I don't know if you saw that on the news, but something like 7,500 people showed up to do this color run. But it turned out that it was during a horrible downpour, and one of the big parts of the color run is all of the pictures and all of the everybody colored in these multicolors. And I definitely noticed the number of people who had their phones not in an OtterBox, not in some waterproof $90 container, but had it in a sandwich bag. and it was working just as well, and it was disposable, and it was something you could slip in your pocket, and if you lost it, it was no big deal. But
sure,
yep, the sandwich bag is just very, very useful when it comes to those sorts
and
of things.
If you keep some air in it, it's actually very floatable too. So if it does get lost or down in a creek, at least it won't sink to the bottom, and you can probably go find it.
Hey, that's a great idea. You know, it's again, appeal to folks with the phone number. If you'd like to get in on the discussion today, you may do that a number of ways. 800-524-3604 is the number you can call. Midday at sdpb.org, MIDDAY. It's probably the most popular way people get a hold of us is by dropping us an email. And, of course, Facebook is there, facebook.com/techradio. The discussion always is on in that area of the Internet. Please join us there. Maybe just bookmark it or like us today and come back and drop us a note later. But I did see a commercial on TV last night for a Samsung phone. That is that showed a lady getting splashed by something her child was eating, and she walked over with the phone and stuck it under the faucet. And my wife is like, "What is she doing, sticking that phone under the faucet? Nobody would do that." And I'm like, "Well, okay. Well, the deal is that it's I don't know if they're using that nanotechnology on this or what they're doing, but they're starting to make phones that are resistant to."
So was it an actual commercial for the Samsung phone itself?
Yes.
Or was it for something that's applied to it?
No, it was for the actual
really?
Phone itself.
So I hadn't seen that yet, but I had saw a commercial for a new product called NeverWet, which is being licensed through Rust-Oleum right now. It's a two-part process. And in their example, the YouTube video, they actually took apart a iPhone, covered it in this NeverWet, and allowed it to dry. And it was part of it was a nanotechnology. You know, they don't claim that there's no warranties on this sort of thing, but mm-hmm. they just wanted to demonstrate it. Put the iPhone back together after the stuff had dried, and then they dropped it in a glass of water and continued to work. And it was a really neat technology. And their big push is to put it on shoes and clothing and that sort of stuff. And then they gave demonstrations on, you know, pouring chocolate syrup on it or mustard or whatever, and it just runs right off just as though it were a very fluid liquid.
Let me stop you real quick. Is this the thing where you put it in the chamber? It's got to be in this kind of ion-charged chamber so these little nano things can stick to
nope,
it?
This is basically like spray paint. So you cover it with, and I don't know the technology very well, but you cover it with a base coat. You allow that to dry, and then you cover it with a top coat. And as soon as that's dry, it then becomes waterproof. And depending on how you use it and the type of material you put it on, it wears away eventually, especially on clothes because of the movement. But I thought it was an interesting technology to put on. If you've got a phone that you're not too worried about, to give it a shot, to spray it on there and see if it truly becomes waterproof. They were saying it was really only waterproof to about 6 inches. So, you know, that should cover you for the occasional drop in a puddle or in a glass of water or something like that. But
did they plug the headphone jack and
they showed you how to do that? Yep, there was
okay. So they did do that.
They did use a Q-tip to cover that all up, and then the speakers and in this case it was an iPhone, and it was like probably a 4 or something older, so it had the large connector on the bottom. Mm-hmm. They made sure to go through that real well with a Q-tip and make sure everything was completely covered.
I meant for the demonstration, for the dunking it in the water, did they cover all that? But
no, they didn't. Nope, they threw it in just as it was. And again, they took it apart so that the internals were the parts that were covered.
Oh, okay.
It wasn't just sprayed on the outside, but then they put it back together, and away it went. So I could see that. Someone said, or they were saying on that, the YouTube video is, you know, $17 for a spray can, which will do many, many, many phones. And I guess it's a two-part thing, so a couple of spray cans. But, that's pretty cheap insurance if you can keep them dry. But if Samsung's making the same thing, which I hadn't seen yet, that's interesting.
Why don't you pull it up on the break? We need to take a quick break and thank the folks that support the show and tell you about other wonderful things going on the radio network. Let's do that. Our 800 number, again, 800-524-3604, the number. And our email address is midday@sdpb.org. Tech Radio, we'll be back after this. and welcome back to Dakota Midday Tech Radio. A reminder that we will be back on the air in July. The date, as I scroll on my computer screen here, is, I believe, July 19th. So join us again on July 19th. Mark your calendars. That will be our only date in July. We will have to celebrate SysAdmin Day a week or so early.
But we need to do it early so that people have a chance to prepare. And
this could be the best one ever because everybody can go bake a cake.
Right.
I think that's the way to do it. So July 19th will be our next show, but we have a couple of halves to go here on this show, and we're talking summer tech today, how to keep those devices protected, and maybe as simple as a sandwich bag.
One thing I
yeah, go ahead, Jeff.
In on that one, though, especially if you're going to be doing hiking in rugged terrain or especially in the fall hunting in fields, because I know of a lot of phones that go out with those people and never return. If you're going to do that kind of stuff where if you drop the phone and the phone gets dropped by accident, it could be hard to find, I would suggest a nice big rubber coating that's in a very neon bright color that's not a natural type color. So it makes finding said phone when you realize it's been lost a lot easier on the trail. So, but yeah, it's kind of surprising how many phones have been lost on the trails and in the fields of South Dakota. So that
sexy camo covered case for the phone might not be very practical when you've dropped it out of your pants pocket or off your hip clip.
Yep, a lot of times getting in and out of cars, stuff like that, you know. You know, I've dropped them in parking lots and stuff, and they're easy. But when you're in the middle of a field or in the middle of a hike or rock climb, it's not so easy to find that stuff.
Well, I remember where
you dropped it.
And we've been talking about these nano coatings and these coatings for phones that take care of the water part of it, but the impact-resistant part is maybe just as looming of a problem. I know, well, a couple of my kids have the commando-type phones that are impact resistant and things, although one of them is sporting a phone with a big crack down the screen, this indestructible phone. So it is completely possible to destroy one of these things, although they try to make it as indestructible as possible. But did you have some more information on that Samsung phone?
Well, they were the GS4 Active is what they're calling it. But then in that same article that I read, it's saying that there's another coating that says Liquipel is used to coat iPhones frequently to ensure water protection. So it looks like there's a couple of options out there, although like you're alluding to, the water protection in this instance does nothing for the dropping of the device, the shattering of the screens. The seems like my phones always have a busted up corner of one or two places, so... Yeah.
What do you use, an OtterBox, or what do you use, a similar type?
Nothing. Mine's just bare. I don't do anything. It's I actually am really. I'm one of those who's super careful about it. But occasionally I'll get a ding. I don't use.
So you get dings, but you don't really. You're not going to chunk off of it.
Right, and to be honest with you, in the 15 years that I've had a cell phone, I've never broke a screen. I've actually never broke a phone to the point where it wouldn't function. So,
you are very careful.
I've had pretty good luck with it, but right. I'm also,
let's take a call. Joe is on the line from Vermilion right now. Good morning, Joe, or good afternoon.
I am. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you now.
I have a first experience user question. I own an iPad 1 and I just recently started using audiblebooks.com. I've listened to them on CD for years and years and years, and I tried to download one to my iPad, which required me to completely update the operating system on my iPad, which I finally got done. And then I downloaded the book, and then the problem occurred when I tried to play it over my car radio. I have a 2011 car, and I assumed that I could plug a cable into my iPad, the little cable with a little round thing, and then plug it into my radio. Well, it never, ever, ever worked. I finally decided to plug the USB port into my car's USB port, and it worked just fine. My question is, why don't both cables work? Why can't I use the little one that I assumed would be the one that gave me the audio output?
So the headphone jack isn't working on the iPad. Either the headphone jack isn't working, or can you plug headphones into that, Joe? and listen on headphones?
I've never tried that. Perhaps I should.
I think that'll answer the question whether or not the iPad is somehow, you know, either not turned up correctly or muted, or the actual is just physically broke. But if you can get audio coming out of that jack into a pair of headphones, then the problem rests either in the cable or in the car radio. So you can sort of track it down from there.
Can you tell me, is there a setting in the iPad to disable that audio output to that port on the for the earphones?
On the one, I'm not really sure if the switch.
I don't think so. I think on that device, and I might be wrong, if Joel would know for sure, but I don't think on that device you can switch it off in a software setting. I believe that it's aware of whether there's something plugged in or not, so it shuts itself off when you pull anything out. But I think Kent is right. I think the best, the very first test would be to plug some headphones into it just to make sure that jack is working.
The cable is brand new.
It's an auto sense. It detects when something's plugged in or not and automatically changes the sound to that port or off.
Okay.
Okay. All right. Thank you for your help.
Thank you for the call. We appreciate it. Did you have another?
Well, I was just going to say, just before that call, I talked about Liquipel and something that iPhone users have been using to make their phones water resistant.
Yeah.
I went to that website just to check it out, and immediately I got a bunch of things that popped up that said lots of Trojans on that website. So people might want to stay away from that for a little while.
Liquipel,
yeah.
I think that's the company that's got the little chambers, and they were putting these in malls. So
okay.
you could walk up to a kiosk and they would treat your phone for you while you were there. But again, they weren't taking the phone apart; they were just putting the phone in. Or and they were working on shoes, and that's the other side to this whole thing. Well, to make your camping stay, presumable camping stay, better if it rains or is moist or whatever, or you're going down the big raging river, is that this technology treats more than just technology. It can do shoes, and it can do jackets, and it can do hats and other things as well. So if you've ever had to dry out, soggy, whatever, it could help in that realm as well. So interesting solutions to problems that have been there for a while.
Yeah.
Okay, again, this is your chance to call for help on SDPB Radio, 1-800-524-3604, the number. The email address is midday@sdpb.org, and, of course, the always on Facebook page, facebook.com/techradio.
go ahead, Jeff. One thing we haven't talked yet about is, and you kind of alluded to the beginning, is how do you keep these devices powered up and stuff? And I was kind of surprised going through catalogs earlier this summer, because there's actually quite a few options now. There's a lot of portable-type recharging stations for just USB devices. I mean, these can't power lights, they can't power anything. They're just tailor-made, and there seems to be a big market to just recharge cell phones, GPS devices, anything, your iPad, your iPod for music playing. And they're quite affordable. You can get actually a portable solar, very portable. It actually works in cloudy conditions, too, device, just to recharge those for about $150. And if you're a big backpack and hiker, there's actually devices that will feed off your own walking motion to store energy in a battery. Now, those are not as good as the solar power because it takes a lot longer and a lot more exercise to get the power in to charge the cell phone backup, but there's actually a lot of devices out there now that you don't have to have mainline electricity to get your devices charged up. So,
And the reason that they can do the low power, it's just that low-hanging fruit. They don't have to put up a big amperage to drive lights and, rotisseries and things like that. So this is easy to do for something like this? Is that why?
Yeah, and I think because more and more people are taking their gadgets on these, especially, cell phones, GPS devices, iPods for music, stuff like that with them camping. And there are no really good ways, unless you, take the whole RV out with you, to recharge this stuff. I have a friend who's a Boy Scout leader, and he said the most popular place in the Boy Scout camp at many times was the three power outlets in the bathroom, because everyone wanted to recharge the scouts were gone for a week camping, and everyone was trying to recharge all their music stuff all the time. So this is actually a pretty big market because, like it or not, this is kind of a connected world, and our children are growing up that way. And it doesn't matter if you're on top of a mountain in Montana or, you know, on the river in Pure. Everyone wants to have connection and have electronic gadgets that work and can be powered.
And GPSs and everything else. They want to be able to blow their air mattresses up and check the weather. I mean, weather radios.
Yeah, check the weather, you know, storms coming in, stuff like that. So, I mean, it can even some of those devices are nice, even in town. What if you have a power outage for 8 hours and your cell phone wasn't charged up? You can always use that then to charge your cell phone in those kind of, you know, emergencies and stuff too, so you can get cell phone coverage back or check the incoming weather to see if there's a thunderstorm moving through, if your power's been knocked out in a blizzard or something like that. You know, those situations happen. So it's always nice to have some kind of alternative power source. And there's actually propane stoves out there that you can use for cooking that will also, using natural gas or propane, actually create electricity, recharge your devices too. So,
well, I saw a George Foreman grill. It's called the iGrill. the George Foreman grills are electric to begin with, so you do need to plug it in. Mm-hmm. But it also has speakers built into it that you can plug your phone or your iPod into, and it plays music and charges your devices. So while you're doing your steaks, I guess. So the tech fun is moving out into the patios and into the campsites, and it's interesting seeing these different devices. There was a link yesterday sent. Was it by you, Jeff, with the little the bio burning stove that basically burns anything, cooks your food, and then on the side of the jacks to plug in and charge your devices.
Yeah, Joel, who could be here today, actually set that one on. And that's a good example. And you've seen a lot more of that kind of stuff happen because it just, I mean, people used to, you know, all you needed was a tent, your hiking boots, your backpack, some water, and some food. Well, that's becoming not enough, and people really do need their electronic gadgets, good or bad. You can make the argument that they shouldn't need that a compass still suffice, but for good or bad, that is modern society.
Yeah, and again, it's your call if you want to take your devices with you or not, but if you do, there are precautions you need to take. I should probably experiment with my phone to see if it can last for 3 or 4 days on charged, just shutting it off and turning it on when I need to. I suspect it probably will work. It shouldn't drain the battery that rapidly in the off position, correct?
It shouldn't, but just no. Like starting a car, you know, one of the toughest things on the battery or one of the biggest battery pulls is going to be that initial turn-on. So you've got to weigh the sitting there idling and trickling versus the when you power up how much it's going to drain. And, of course, if you only do it twice a day, no big deal. If you're doing it every hour, that's going to be a whole different story. You're probably going to drain your battery faster.
And a good alternative also is the two biggest power things in a phone is your screen, so if you keep it off as much as possible, and also the wireless connections, be it Wi-Fi or cell phone. That's why many phones, if you put into airplane mode, will also last a lot longer. Though remember, you don't have connectivity unless you turn that off, and there is an initial power surge, just like Amos was talking about, to turn those on and off. So, but just turning the wireless off will extend your battery life quite a bit, as long as you don't need, you know, internet connection to do what you want to do on that device.
So if I know I'm not going to be near a Wi-Fi hotspot, if I turn the Wi-Fi off and the Bluetooth off, is that going to save power?
Absolutely, yeah. If it's not searching for something, if it's not trying to make that connection. And in fact, you know, even if you don't know whether there's wireless connections around or not, and you go through an area where there are open Wi-Fis or there are Wi-Fis available and it tries to make that connection, that negotiation there is going to eat up battery as well. So turning off any unnecessary resources on the device is going to save you energy.
Are there apps that drain the battery as well that possibly not needed at the time or ever?
Yeah, that's becoming less of an issue, but there's still bad apps out there. But those apps, once they're running, will drain battery no matter what. And usually you can tell that if you every once in a while turn your phone, completely off, pull the battery if you can, and reboot, and if it's running pretty good and then all of a sudden you start having massive where it's draining the battery every day, you probably have an app that you suddenly brought up running that's draining it. And unfortunately for that, you kind of have to troubleshoot those out independently.
That's a good solution for the Android side. Does that work on the? We'll have to ask. I think Joel's going to be joining us here in a little bit. I have to ask him on the Mac side. I know you can hold the power button down, get your little. It brings a bar up at the bottom that shows you all the apps that are running.
What I do on my iPad is you can actually bring up from the bottom all the running tasks and apps, and you can actually close them independently. Anything you run on an iOS device keeps running in the background. Once you start it up, and then a few things start up, but not many. But you can always see what's running, and you can actually independently kill them off, and then see if your battery life is affected that way too. You actually swipe from the bottom with multiple fingers towards the top, and it'll pull up a little kind of task manager bar that shows all your running apps. And just like as you move apps, you can actually there's a little delete thing that you can hit and close the app out manually.
Sounds great. Reminder to folks that our phone number is 1-800-524-3604. Plenty of time to get in on the discussion today. We'll probably wrap up the summer tech tips here in a couple of minutes, but we'll still talk about it throughout the show if you want to call in. We're going to move on to a next segment of the show. We're going to answer a question about some internet streaming that we're doing here and possibly be joined by Joel Brovelite on the phone. We've got some MacBook questions for him and of course, learn all about the world of Mac in the third segment of the show here today. Again, our phone number, 1-800-524-3604, the email address, midday@sdpb.org, and our Facebook page, facebook.com/techradio. And welcome back to this summer edition of Dakota Midday Tech Radio. Our next program is July 19th. Mark your calendars. Call the neighbors, wake the kids. We're going to have a show then. Feel free to contact us anytime between now and then. The discussion always continues on Facebook, facebook.com/techradio. Want to peel off an email question here from Jim today that concerns the audio stream of SDPB Radio, which is, I guess, very topical because we're streaming right now. And here's his question, Jim from Sioux Falls. He says, about 3 weeks ago, my Kindle Fire started making a very choppy audio stream on SDPB. I didn't get choppy audio stream on any other radio channels or using my computers. Any idea of why all of a sudden my Kindle Fire won't play your internet stream without it being very choppy? Well, here's the deal. About 3 weeks ago, we changed everything. Coincidentally, we do not stream our radio network through the same provider that we had. Actually, it is the same provider, but a different way of getting it there. Consequently, chose to, at the time, kind of juice that stream up a little bit. So instead of just 8 kilobits per second, we're doing 96 kilobits per second.
So it should actually sound better then.
It does sound better.
Okay.
If you are on a really good internet connection, that audio stream is going to come by just fine. So on phones and iPads, and I've actually listened to it on Nooks and other devices. My boss has a Kindle. I'll have him check. But I'm suspecting we've had one other gentleman that was having an issue with the choppiness, and I am suspecting it might be a connectivity problem. But, Jim, I will check into this. It's something that you're right. 3 weeks ago, something did change. And it included a different provider, a different address, totally different way of doing things, and a kind of a fatter stream. So more bits are going down the internet. So in audio terms, that equates to better experience.
So I wonder if the issue is, and I don't know how old his Kindle is or really anything about it, but I wonder, does that translate to a beefier stream filling up the buffer quicker, and then it not having enough information to replay? I don't know how that.
I'm going to have to check. I'll check with the counterparts at NPR because that's the company that we're streaming through now, and see if the knowledge base out there knows anything about it. But definitely we'll check into that, Jim. It's something that we've had very few questions on. But it's important, so we will get back to you on that.
And, you mentioned the Nook. which just this week there was news on that Nook is Barnes & Noble has decided that they just can't keep up with the iPad and the Kindle Fire,
okay.
And so they are going to be getting rid of their Nook Color. They're going to continue to produce the black and white e-reader, I guess, for now, which surprises me that they would do one and not the other. But
some of the Nook HD that I just bought my wife.
Well, it's good that you got it. They'll continue to support it, I believe.
Okay.
It's just the hardware they're going to. Because, you know, you can get the Nook software, you can get the Kindle software, actually, on the Android, on the iPad. And
the apps.
The apps,
yeah.
Yep, so that you can read the books that are provided through those services. And it sort of makes sense, I guess. I'm not familiar with the latest iterations, but at the time that I was familiar with them, they just weren't as feature-packed as, you know, the Android devices or the iPad devices. Granted, that they also weren't as pricey, but yeah. Now with the reduction in prices, you know, you can get a nice Google Nexus 7 for $199 or something like that. So what does a Google or what does a Nook HD run these days?
It was about $100.50, I believe. Yeah. Was the cost on it. It was on sale at a big box store in Vermilion. Mm-hmm. And it's you know, I like the form factor. It fits in my hand. I got a big hand. Mm-hmm. But it fits in my hand really well. It seems quick. It's bright. So the little I've done, I haven't read any books on it, mm-hmm. but I've done some surfing, and I obviously go through the public broadcasting website. We've had some changes there as well. The whole mobile thing is really kind of going bananas. Yeah, believe it or not,
really?
I know that
yeah.
shocks you,
yeah.
but, we've launched, for the radio side, listen.sdpb.org, which is fully mobile compatible. So if you go there on your Android device or on your iPad or whatever, you're going to get a different experience, so hopefully a better experience, depending on the device you have. And then watch.sdpb.org is on the flip side for those folks that watch public broadcasting in South Dakota. You get those videos, the streams, the archive streams of anything from Antiques Roadshow to Dakota Life and everything in between is available, again, depending on your device. If it's an iPad, an iPhone, an Android, a BlackBerry, or whatever, you're going to get that different experience over there. So we've had some technology changes on the website, and I like to look at them on as many different devices as I can. The Nook happens to be in the house, and I've enjoyed it. I will tell you that. I'll quiz the wife and see how she feels. If she seems to spend her time equally between the iPad and the Nook HD, which is
so. You had an existing iPad already, and yet.
She
so
does.
What was the impetus to get a Nook then? Was there something missing? Was it the form factor?
It was the iPad being too big and heavy. She had bought her the original Nook.
Sure.
So back in the day, the one that had the 3G phone in it, mm-hmm. The black and white, and that has migrated to one of the children in a different town, and she was pining for the smaller form factor. She wanted her Nook back, something that was just kind of a, you know, a reading device, mm-hmm. Something that was meant to do that. And so I took the opportunity when the sale was on to pick one of those up for her. So it was, excuse me, the smaller form factor for her. But again, it's, I think if I'm looking over at the couch at the right times, there's probably almost an equal, depending on which one's charged.
Sure.
At the time.
Well, that's probably the reason. You charge one while you're using the other and back and forth.
And probably the biggest difference, and I didn't mean to go down the ebook road today, but that's fine. Probably the biggest difference that I think she finds with the Nook app for the iPhone or the iPad is you can't purchase the books there. You can read them there if they've been bought either on the Nook or on a computer.
Mm-hmm.
She doesn't want to walk over to the computer, log on to Barnes & Noble's website, sort through the books, buy the book, and then go over and fire the app up and download.
Oh.
You know, it's not as convenient to use the Nook app on the iPad as it is to just pick up the Nook, hit the button, buy the book, have it download instantly, and you're off and running.
And I wonder if that's a genius move on their part as to why somebody would want to continue to do the Nook.
Yeah. Well, Cameron is on the line with us from Sioux Falls, and let's get to his question about IE-10. Hello, Cameron.
Hello.
Good afternoon.
Hey, it seems, hello, yeah, ever since, I'm running a laptop with Vista, and ever since I've upgraded to Internet Explorer 10, my online bank keeps asking me to, you know, whether this is a public or a private computer, and it won't register it as a private computer, so I have to keep putting in an extra security word every time. I tried messing with security settings a little bit. I've lowered the security settings somewhat. That didn't do it. I've added that site to the safe sites, and that didn't seem to make a difference. I'm wondering if there's something else that I could do to make a difference on this.
Sure. Jeff, do you have anything for Cameron?
Unfortunately, I can't hear him right now. Question?
Sorry about that. Yeah, Cameron just upgraded to Internet Explorer 10 and is having an issue with his bank when he logs on to do his e-banking. It keeps asking him for security questions. It won't. He gets a question about if this is a public or a private computer, and the private thing just doesn't seem to stick. So he's got to do an extra security question every time he logs in, and it just is kind of a really inconvenient thing for him.
Unfortunately, most likely it's all those kind of functions are handled through what's called cookies. So, and you probably might have heard of these before, but a lot of the websites use these. And they have to actually be used in order to perform sort of functions like remembering who you are. And one of the functions when you click that is to set a cookie on the local machine saying, hey, this is a private computer or this is a public computer. Well, and there's different types of cookies and how they work. And one of the things with different versions of IE in Chrome and Firefox is they've gotten much more strict on what cookies can be stored and from who and how and for how long. I have a feeling it's probably the cookie setting. He may need to go into his IE settings and allow all cookies from that domain. It's probably just being a memory cookie, which means it works as long as he's connected, but the second he closes out, it forgets it. And it's probably just one of the new security settings. Usually if it's something really bad, IE will tell you. There'll be a status thing that pops up on the screen saying, hey, you do not want to do this, or this is a false cookie, or something like that really bad going on. So it's probably pretty safe. He probably just needs to go into settings and just enable cookies from that domain.
Okay.
You don't want to enable cookies globally because then all the bad things can happen. But from his online banking site, and it's probably just one of those few tweaks and changes between IE 9, 8, and 10. So.
Okay. Cameron, did you have a question?
I'm wondering, too, whether I have – well, I was wondering whether – I can't remember if I have, but I think I might have checked the setting for don't track me.
Oh,
and I
sure.
wonder if that would make a difference.
Absolutely. Don't track me is one of the ways that you keep cookies from being written to your machine because that's how information gets shared.
Just talking to you reminded me of that. Yep.
We'll
check that out. All righty, well, guys, well, thank you so much.
Thanks, Cameron. And quick question, Jeff. Could his using Chrome or Firefox make a difference in this instance?
Yes, but remember, they all have the do not track policies also. And they also all manage cookies for security, and you can block and allow. So depending, and in some ways it depends on how the website sends you the cookie, what type of cookie it is. So it could be, you know, a mix. It may work better, may not. He may still have to go into each of those browsers and open up settings to allow it to work.
Great. Hey, Joel Brovelite joins us now for the waning moments of the show. Your favorite part, Joel. Thanks for tuning in today. Yeah. Hey, we've got a question for you. Roger from Esteline is on with us. He's got a question about the iPad Mini. So let's get with Roger here. Good afternoon,
right.
Roger.
Yes, sir. Thank you for taking my call. My wife and I were traveling, and we're in Las Vegas, purchased an iPad Mini, and we're using the GPS function in it to get around Las Vegas. And now that we're home in South Dakota, it says cannot determine location anymore. So I'm wondering if there's something I've disarmed or disabled or being
okay.
with this thing.
Joel, did you hear that?
Yeah, I did. There's a couple questions. First, we'd need to know, did you get the Wi-Fi only or did you get an iPad Mini with the data connection? Like, did you sign up through Verizon or Sprint?
Question.
Roger, do you know, did you buy it from a cell carrier like a Verizon or Sprint?
Oh, no. We
AT&T.
Didn't.
Okay.
Okay. Well, let's just assume that you didn't get one with data. Then what it was relying on for GPS were open Wi-Fi signals when you were in Las Vegas, and which in Vegas there's probably lots of them. So if you're in town or in South Dakota, it's probably not picking up near as many Wi-Fi signals. So and or they're not mapped properly. So it's going to have a lot of trouble unless you manually connect it to Wi-Fi. If you did get a data version, you need to find out which data version that is, AT&T, Sprint, or Verizon, and then you need to contact that provider and make sure that they recognize that it's in, you know, that you're in a different state and that's where you live and all that, or possibly you had a trial and it elapsed. So that you need to find out which one it is, and if it is just Wi-Fi, then you need to hook up to some Wi-Fi towers.
Okay.
Does that answer your question?
I think so. Yes, we can research it from there, I believe. Thank you.
Thank you, Roger. You have a great weekend.
Yeah.
Yep. Hey, Joel, while I got you on the line here, we have a question from Pamela for you.
Sir.
She says, I just bought a MacBook Pro. What tips do you have for an amateur Mac owner? Quickly.
Oh, boy. that's such a wide-open question.
Yes, it is.
I would probably say, you know, make sure you have a good, fast Internet connection, because although this could be true with any portable, you know, Internet device, you know, they're just not as good without a good, fast Internet connection. And, you know, make sure you have a really good, you know, protection setup figured out, whether you're going to get a case or a sleeve. Those are very helpful, and I would also recommend, you know, make sure that you have a good backup system, you know, kind of with that. I would recommend Apple's new Time Capsule if, you know, it gives you a good fast Internet connection and an automatic form of backup, so you can back up all your photos and all the things that you create on there.
Okay. Any particular apps or programs that you found indispensable?
Well, you know, with a MacBook Pro and without knowing, you know, the area of interest that she has, you know, a lot of stuff that comes with it, whether it's iPhoto or iMovie, are going to be fabulous. If you need to do some, you know, word processing, iWork is a very inexpensive program that gives you, a word processing page design kind of program, as well as a spreadsheet and a presentation program. But without knowing specifics, I don't know that I'd recommend anything in particular other than what it comes with, which is a great suite of, you know, kind of creation software for, you know, digital media.
Okay. So so get out there, start just, can she just play around with it and find the different programs in there? Are there any that she's going to find surprising that are just sort of built into this that I think you just listed them all, didn't you?
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, a lot of people overlook, I think, the stuff that does come with it, you know, whether that's iMovie or iTunes or iPhoto, all of those programs have a very, a lot of useful abilities that, you know, maybe you can go to Barnes & Noble and grab a quick book on, you know, maybe the Missing Manual series, which is one of my favorite series of books for any computer, and kind of study up on what it already comes with. Be surprised what you can do.
Did you say Mystic Manuals?
The Missing Manual series. It's a series of books written for programs that obviously don't come with an instruction manual, at least the kind we're used to, you know.
Sure, sure.
So they make it for all sorts of devices, whether it's Android or iPhone or whatever.
Hey, well, Joel, I want to thank you for joining us today. You joined just at the right time. You kind of pulled our bacon out of the fire there, to go back into our camping euphemism there. Thank you so much for joining us. Amos Asip from SDN Communications here, and Jeff Litterick from BIT and Peer. Thank you so much, Jeffrey. Reminder to listeners, if you joined us late, an MP3 version of the show will be posted to the web soon along with the show notes. Hit the website at sdpb.org/techradio. Join us again July 19th. And, of course, stay tuned to South Dakota Public Broadcasting. NPR News is next, followed by Talk of the Nation.